Thank you, Blessing and Jonga. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Tuesday, June 3rd, 2014. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Sandra Nyaira.
And I'm Chris Gande.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Opposition leader Morgan Tsvangirai dismisses a speculation on his health, telling Studio 7 that he's back at work and even taking to the golf course.
I'm now back and fully recovered. So I'm not a stone, I'm a human being. And so the doctor advised that I should take it easy for a while.
The Tobacco Industry Marketing Board says farmers produced more tobacco this year compared to last year, resulting in lower prices for the crop.
So this year we've managed a bit more, but obviously that increase in earnings is being driven by the volume of tobacco sold rather than the price being offered to growers.
And the leader of the Johane Masowe Echishanu Budiriro 2 sect, Matsibaba Ishmael Mufani, is still on the run following Friday's attack by members of his church on police officers and journalists at his shrine in Harare.
Opposition MDC leader Morgan Tsvangirai says he's back at work, adding, quote, "It feels good to be back." In an exclusive interview with Studio 7, Mr. Tsvangirai hinted at boycotting future by-elections to force President Robert Mugabe's ruling ZANU-PF to introduce electoral reforms. Mr. Tsvangirai has been ill for the past 2 weeks, creating a lot of media hype. Some media outlets claimed that he had a terminal illness, adding he was so broke that he had to sneak out of the trauma center in Harare without paying his bill. A few days ago, there were reports that Mr. Tsvangirai had been airlifted to Botswana as his health had taken a turn for the worse. Mr. Tsvangirai tells VOA Studio 7 reporter Blessing Zulu that he is healthy and even played a round of golf today, adding the rest was merely on his doctor's orders.
Well, the temporary problem, which the doctor advised against being active, so he prescribed that we should stay at home. I am surprised that some of the comments and the conclusions have nothing to do with my health condition. I'm now back and I'm fully recovered. So I'm not a stone. I'm a human being. And so the doctor advised that I should take it easy for a while.
So we can safely say you are back now?
I'm back at work. I was at work yesterday just to dispel some of the speculations about Tsvangirai collapsing again and going into hospital again. And I was at work today, so I actually had a golf game.
The Herald newspaper has been reporting that you had an emotional and mental breakdown and you tried to avoid paying your hospital bills. You have denied these reports and said you will sue the Herald for slander. How far have you gone with that?
No, we can't pursue. We know what the Herald's mission is. And as far as I'm concerned, the hospital has paid its bills. All this speculation about running away without paying bills, it's defamatory. How can a man of my position sneak out of a hospital without paying bills? And especially where you are escorted out of the hospital by the hospital staff, by the hospital security. Why should that be a problem with the health? As far as any other action is concerned, we're still consulting with our lawyers on that.
And turning to the party, the last time we spoke, your former Secretary General Tendai Biti and several other members had attempted to kick you out of the party, saying you had deviated from the party principle and you were no longer fit to lead. How would you describe the state of your party at the moment? Are you still firmly in charge?
The party is recovered from the turbulence caused by this unfortunate incident of ambitious people. We have not deviated from any of our principles. The NDC is committed to the democratic process and fighting for democracy in the country. And in this instance, internally in the party, the only democratic process where people are bestowed with any mandate is through the Congress. I don't see any other process other than the people giving you the mandate, not usurping the people's mandate. So as far as I'm concerned, the party has recovered from the turbulence. We are on the cover. Obviously, resources are limited, but that doesn't mean that we are not able to engage in our activities.
So do you feel as strong a leader as you used to be?
Nothing is shaking me, if at all. These attempts at hostile takeover actually strengthen our position, galvanize the people. Because people see the hypocrisy behind those kind of moves. And that as far as they are concerned, they are committed to them achieving their program objectives.
The MDC has lost in some recent primary elections, notably in Mbare, Gweru, and only recently in Chegu too. Some say this is proof that your party has lost its support base. How do you respond to this?
Well, the thing is that the real problem is not about going to a by-election. The real problem is whether the conditions for holding that election are free and fair. In fact, the council had to make a resolution whether it is a futile exercise for us to continue to legitimize unfair rules and therefore insisting on reforms becomes the agenda. We will continue to claim to clamor for reforms of the electoral process. And I think that it is advisable for the MDC not to participate in these flawed processes.
Are you hinting at a possible boycott of these by-elections in future?
No, it's not a boycott. We will just insist on the reforms that are necessary for us to have a credible election.
ZANU-PF has reneged on many of the constitutional agreements, and many say the MDC appears to be ineffective or unable to counter ZANU-PF's moves. From your standpoint, what role is the MDC playing at this point?
Well, we are a minority party in government. We are an opposition party. We don't control parliament. And so the two thirds of ZANU-PF, that is how the MDC will shout. As long as ZANU-PF has got the controlling majority, it will continue to pass its laws or not implement any of the constitutional provisions. So that's a handicap. And that's why the whole electoral process is a farce, because then it allows for those kind of unconstitutional actions to take place.
The next elections are 4 years away. Does the MDC have a plan other than contesting the elections to bring change to the country?
Well, we have the popularity of the people. What is important is how do we transfer that popularity into power. That's the challenge we face. And for us, that's the biggest hurdle we need to work at. And of course, we are committed to the electoral process. And until those electoral processes are transparent, free and fair, I think it will be futile for anyone to participate in an election, having experience over the last 2-3 elections, then believe that you can deliver electoral victory through that flawed process.
That was MDCT leader Morgan Tsvangirai speaking with VOA Studio 7 reporter Blessing Zulu from Harare. Tomorrow we'll give you more from Blessing's interview with Mr. Tsvangirai, so please stay tuned.
Nothing has changed so far as the status of this house is concerned. It is a property identified. I requested for some money to buy it, given me first option to buy it if I have the money. They've not made an evaluation. So what is so controversial about the former Prime Minister occupying house?
MDCT activist Witness Dube, who is accused of stealing a vehicle, cell phone and cash from the party's rival Renewal team, was today released on bail by a Bulawayo magistrate pending trial in a fortnight. Dube, who is also a chauffeur for MDCT Deputy President Thokozani Kuphe, allegedly assaulted Zakaria Nkomo, a driver for the party's Matabeleland North Provincial Chairperson Sengezo Chabangu, who is aligned to the Renewal team, before stealing cash, cell phones and snatching an Isuzu truck he was driving in the city last week. His accomplices are still at large. Chabangu tells reporter Standigile Mhlanga his team made a separate High Court application compelling the MDCT to return the vehicle while criminal proceedings continue in the magistrate's court.
The spoliation application, which was made by our lawyers last week, we expect that courts to sit any time this week. We seek that stolen property to be returned to the rightful owners, because we have got every documentation, every paperwork that proves beyond any reasonable doubt that we are the custodian of that stolen property and we are the rightful owners of that stolen property. It has got nothing to do with the criminal proceedings that are actually happening in the magistrate court.
We also spoke to your colleagues who are saying that the vehicle is not part of the court proceedings. Has that been incorporated into their charge sheet?
It is. They are also charged of kidnapping. There are so many charges in that. So if people decide to be ignorant, it doesn't necessarily mean that the law will be ignorant.
We were also hearing that it came out in the court that the MTC leader, Mr. Tsvangirai, is the one who ordered the return of property that are with your team. How did this come about?
They think even if they go to court and say Mokgweng Tsvangirai said this, then court is going to abide to that. Mokgweng Tsvangirai is not God. And Mokgweng Tsvangirai was the leader of the MTC. He is no longer in the MTC, even if he was. I don't think we have got any institution who wants to have a president who refuses himself to authorize a vehicle. Whichever the case, but Mokgweng is not God. That's simple. And it shows that these people, they are desperate.
That was ousted Matabeleland North Provincial Chairman Sengezo Chabangu, who says he's aligned to the party's renewal team. On the line with Studio 7 from Mwange.
The leader of the Johan Masowe Echishanu Budiriro sect, Mazibaba Ishmael Mufani, is still on the run following the assault of police officers and journalists at his shrine in Harare Friday. This as 26 members of the sect appeared in court today and were denied bail. Mufani, who allegedly calls himself God, and a number of his followers are on the run since Friday, but police believe that they are still in the country. Yesterday, a group of people, some wearing ZANU PF regalia, stormed the shrine in Budiriro Sebab and burnt garments and clay pots belonging to the fugitive sect members.
The involvement of ZANU-PF in the Bapostori feud has raised tensions in the suburb, with the MDCT Shadow Minister for Home Affairs, Lillian Timvios, saying the incident shows the country is sliding into lawlessness. In a statement, Timvios said police procedures were not followed when police descended on the shrine to serve them an order to vacate the place. She said a proper investigation must be carried out. Commentator Maurice Ngwenya, who's also a ZANU-PF activist, told Studio 7 that the burning down of the shrine was not political, but was a demonstration against the sect members who are also known to support ZANU-PF.
Well, to my understanding, this has been a very emotional issue. Therefore, I expect that some people, especially the youth, might get angry and behave in this way, but I don't think this is an act that was sanctioned by the party or anyone sent by the party to behave that way, because we have security structures that deal with such issues.
Mr. Ngwenya, can you tell us why you would say these are not ZANU-PF youths when some of them were clearly wearing T-shirts emblazoned with the ZANU-PF logo?
I'm not saying they were not ZANU-PF youth. I am saying it was not an organized thing from the party. They were not sent by the party. Yes, there might be ZANU-PF youth due to the fact that the majority of people, especially in that area, support ZANU-PF. Therefore, we expect that they might have been supporters, indeed. But it's not an act that was sanctioned by the party.
Maurice Ngwenya is commentator and a ZANU-PF activist. He spoke to Studio 7 on the line from Harare.
Meanwhile, Heal Zimbabwe Trust says it is concerned by what it says is the continuing use of youth as agents of violence in the country. This follows events in Budiriro and the Johani Masowe sect. Our reporter Tatenda Gumbo spoke with Heal Zimbabwe Trust program coordinator Kleto Manjova, who says the action yesterday by the youth to burn the church shrine is deplorable.
We are concerned with the involvement of the youth cycles of violence and conflict, because experience shows us that these people, they are subject to abuse and they are subject to be used as cannon fodder in a number of disputes, and are deeply concerned with the involvement in the Budiriro dispute.
As an organization, you pointed out that this, of course, the issue of youths being involved in political or just general violence has been a long-standing issue in the country. What do you hope can happen in regards to curbing this issue?
Yeah, I think we need a holistic approach in dealing with this. And it's good to go by the day you say that we need to catch them young. We need to target our youth, work with them, and discourage them from getting into violent conduct, getting into violent means of resolving disputes. I don't think it was proper for youth, especially from political persuasions, especially under political banners or under political beliefs, to delve into any conflict that would be happening in our community. Because at the moment, it's a conflict in our community, in our society in Zimbabwe. History shows us that the moment a conflict is politicized, chances of resolving such a conflict are very, very slim.
Here with Zimbabwe Trust Program Coordinator Kletwa Manjova on the line with Studio 7's Tatenda Gumbo.
The Tobacco Industry Marketing Board says 177 million kilograms of flue-cured tobacco was sold on the auction floors by the close of business yesterday, bringing in $560 million as compared to 135 million kilograms sold at the same time last year. TIMB Chief Executive Andrew Matibiri says the sales have so far surpassed last year's whole selling season's output of about 166 million kilograms that brought in about $495 million. This year's tobacco fetched an average price of 3.18 per kilogram, a 14% decline from last year's national price of $3.71 per kilogram, a decline attributed to high volumes of the crop flooding the market at the same time. Matibiri tells reporter Jonga Kandemiri that since some farmers were still bringing their crop to the floors, it was difficult to predict the final figures of tobacco expected to hit the market.
Up to yesterday, a total of over 177 million kilograms had been sold. This can be compared to about 135 million kilograms that had been sold at the same time last year. So far, the tobacco has brought in over $564 million as compared to last year when it brought in just below $500 million. So this year we've managed a bit more, but obviously that increase in earnings is being driven by the volume of tobacco sold rather than the price being offered to growers.
Some farmers are bitter over the price of tobacco this year. Are you not afraid of tobacco facing a similar decline as cotton?
We are worried, obviously, that our average price will come down, but the drop in the average price has been brought about by the reduced demand for the lower grade of tobacco, which obviously was fetching lower prices. But overall, we know that, I mean, we can produce quality tobacco, and quality tobacco will always sell, and there's a shortage of quality tobacco on the market.
The other issue threatening tobacco production is the issue of firewood. How are you handling this?
As TIMB and as also an industry, we are promoting the use of alternative sources of energy for curing tobacco. We are trying to encourage the use of coal, and there's some work being done on the use of solar energy and biogas. We are also encouraging the use of fuel-efficient burns.
That was Tobacco Industry Marketing Board Chief Executive Andrew Matibiri on the phone from Harare with Studio 7 reporter Jonga Kandemiri.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Now it's time for us, Chris, to look at regional and international news.
The situation in Ukraine topped the agenda today as U.S. President Barack Obama paid a visit to Poland to reassure its leaders of U.S. support. After meeting in Warsaw with Polish President Bronislaw Komorowski, Mr. Obama called for Russia to help prevent the flow of weapons to separatists in eastern Ukraine and use its influence to get the militants there to support peace.
And a leading Pakistani politician has been arrested in London, sparking fears of unrest in his home city of Karachi. Officials with the Mutihada Kwami Movement, or MQM party, say Altaf Hussein was detained today on suspicion of money laundering. British police say a 60-year-old man was arrested following a search of his property in London, but did not confirm his identity. Altaf Hussein leads the MQM party in Pakistan's southern port city of Karachi. He has been in self-imposed exile in London since the early 1990s when Pakistan's government cracked down on his party. He regularly addresses his supporters in Karachi through telephone. Following reports of Hussein's arrest, businesses in Karachi closed early, fearing riots and other forms of violence.
The Zimbabwe Students' Union says it is concerned by lack of safety on the country's roads following the arrest of the union's former gender secretary, Cosette Chirinda. Chirinda was charged with public incitement after she was hit by a taxi fleeing police officers last week. The taxi had been parked illegally. Chirinda was arrested at the scene for protesting against the police and remanded overnight at Harare Central Police Station. Zinasu says Chirinda is being treated unjustly. Reporter Tatenda Gumbo spoke with the Zinasu National spokesman Avoid Masiraha, who hopes Chirinda will be cleared of the charges when she appears in court Friday.
So she just questioned the police officer why they seem to give more priority to money at the expense of the people's lives. And from that, that's when she was arrested. But the issue is about questioning why the police seems to pursue more taxi drivers yet at the expense of the people's lives.
Was she injured when she was hit by the rearview mirror of this taxi that was fleeing?
She didn't suffer a serious injury. She was just hit by a few mirror, but she was just bored by the fact that the police officer was not even concerned about being hit by the taxi, but was concerned of arresting the taxi driver for parking at an illegal point along Park Street.
This, of course, has been an issue of some people are saying that the issue of transportation, an issue of safety and roads in the cities are becoming a problem. Of course, swaying away from the issue that she was arrested for public incitement, what's your view on that issue?
Yes, we've always said that the government should come up with a lasting solution on the issue of commuters, on the issue of taxis in town. Because we've had so many incidents where people are injured or where people even die because of these commuters running away from the police. So what we are saying is the government should come up with a lasting solution on the issue of vehicles, on the issue of commuters in Harare, so that the problem doesn't become a national problem, so that people are not arrested for no reason, like what happened to our former gender secretary, Cosette Chirinda.
That was Zimbabwe National Students Union National Spokesman Avoid Masiraha.
The United States Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, is awarded the 2014 William H. Forge Award for Most Outstanding Public Health Scientific Oral Presentation to Donwell Bangure, a Zimbabwean public health expert. Bangure, an assistant field coordinator at the University of Zimbabwe's School of Health, Public Health, was honored for his work on a research paper and presentation entitled Effectiveness of Short Message Reminders on Childhood Immunization Program in Kadoma, Zimbabwe 2013, a randomized controlled trial. The study focused on the use of short message services or SMS reminders in increasing the uptake of immunization services in Kadoma in Mashonaland and West. He spoke earlier on with Mavelas Mhlanganyawe.
The award that I won is the highest international knight honor, and it's called the William H. Forge Award for the most outstanding public health scientific oral presentation. Well, I was so excited to have won this award, and also maybe considering that I'm the second African to win this award after Dr. Luka Ibrahim of Nigeria, who also won this award in Africa.
What research did you conduct that actually led to you winning this award on behalf of Zimbabwe and Africa as a whole?
The research that I conducted, it was on effectiveness of short message test reminders on childhood immunization program in Kadongo, Zimbabwe, which was a randomized controlled trial. Basically, the reason of conducting the research is wanted to investigate the effectiveness of short message test reminders on immunization coverage in Kadoma City. And we also wanted maybe to assess the effects in terms of improving immunization coverage to determine maybe the costs that are associated with the use of SMS. And we also wanted to look at whether there is any delay that will be encountered for those that will be receiving the SMS in terms of improving the immunization coverage in Kadoma City.
And what did your findings reveal?
In terms of the findings that we found out is that immunization coverage improved for those that were receiving the SMS. Immunization coverage was about 97%, and for those that were not receiving SMS, immunization coverage was about 75%. Considering that Kadoma City, it has got a target of 90%, where they are saying they need to at least achieve 90% so that they can prevent some of these vaccine-preventable conditions. So their immunization coverage, if they are not using SMS, it was 75%.
That was Danu Banguri, an assistant field coordinator at the University of Zimbabwe School of Public Health, speaking there with Marvelous Mklanganya Huye.
People in Malawi say they are expecting a change in the style of governance of the Democratic Progress Party, which has won national elections under the new president, Peter Wamutarika. During its previous administration, the country was facing economic challenges after donors withdrew their aid, citing poor governance. But the new president has promised a change. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
The challenges Malawians faced during the leadership of the late President Bingu wa Mutharika included the acute shortage of fuel, scarcity of foreign exchange, and ever-increasing prices of goods and services on the market. This may explain why over 60% of Malawians did not vote for his younger brother during last month's elections, which Peter Mutharika won with just 37% of the total presidential votes. The new president directly addressed those concerns in his inaugural speech Monday. He promised Malawians a change in leadership style.
Those of you who have been worried, I can assure you that the DPP has changed. And therefore, we have learned from the past, as I said at my brother's funeral, that maybe we made mistakes in the past. But if we had mistakes, it was out of judgment, not out of evil. But of course, will make different decisions.
But he said his administration will renew some policies of the former DPP administration, including initiatives for greater food production, development of rural areas, and empowerment of women. President Mutharika takes power after a corruption scandal known as Cashgate and a disputed election that was challenged by the outgoing president, Joyce Banda. Mr. Mutharika called for unity among Malawians in helping him to rebuild the country. But human rights campaigner Timothy Ntambo tells VOA that it might be hard to fully trust what the new president says because citizens were sorely disappointed by the administration of his older brother.
Here an instance, during the first leadership of Bingu wa Mutharika, he had a lot of pressure from the opposition and he delivered what Malawians expected. And the nationals thought if they give him full mandate with a majority, I think he would do better. But the expectations of the citizens work to the opposite.
President Mutharika invited all 11 other presidential candidates to help him rebuild the country, promising to approach them one by one in the near future. He also said his administration will have a 20-member cabinet, half the size of previous governments, to cut down on spending. But a political science lecturer at the University of Malawi, Ernest Tindwa, says Mr. Mutharika's inaugural address lacked seriousness on various issues.
I don't think that really we are going to see significant changes in terms of the way we have done our politics, in the way we have managed the economy. I mean, there was nothing really special, there was nothing unique in the speech. On the basis of that, I am inclined to believe that there won't be significant changes in the way we run our government.
People on the streets of Blantyre who spoke to VOA had a wait-and-see attitude on how the new DPP leadership would differ from the previous one, which for the most part they said had let them down. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
Thank you, Lamek. Unfortunately, time is not on our side. Please remember to stay tuned for Live Talk. Today we are discussing